Really good way to get your information. Go talk about the 5 must take photos when you get to the cemetery, and then how to deal with tombstones that are hard to read. I'm not going to talk at all about restoring any tombstones. That's really beyond anything I know, probably beyond this audience. You need professionals to come in and at least train you on what you can and cannot do. First rule is safety first. Primarily, you need to be looking out for yourself and make sure that those tombstones are not going to fall on you, or, you know, if you're trying to lift them up to see, because they probably fell face down and the data you want to see is probably in the mud. But, you know, don't attempt to do anything that's going to cause harm to you, something falling on you. And then the sake of the tombstone, too. These are very fragile things that we want to last for years and years. So primarily my focus today is going to be how to get the data you need without doing any harm to the tombstones. And please, at any point in time, if you have a question, ask me. My presentation isn't very many slides, so we'll obviously get through them very quickly. What you ask is in a later slide. I'll just let you know that, and we'll deal with that at the time. I actually meant to talk about what was available from the cemeteries first before this slide. I first started my genealogy journey in Cincinnati, and boy, the cemeteries there in a bigger town are so different, because you go in, they actually have little pamphlets, they have these wonderful maps. I was able to go have relatives here at Old St. Joseph's Cemetery in the Price Hill area of Cincinnati. So went into the office, and I could give them a last name, and they could tell me every area of that cemetery and give me a map so I could drive around about anybody with that last name that I'm searching. So, and they even, you know, highlighted it for me so I knew exactly what road I need to be taking. So that is such a blessing. I actually have a great grandmother that's buried in the pauper's field over in Price Hill too. I think it was the cholera epidemic, and boy, they were just doing burial after burial after burial. And so, I mean, there would be 5 or 6 on a single day. So she's out here in plot 104. So
they have for the records is great.
Yes, it's an incredible record. So I know who's all around her. The unfortunate thing is, in that particular area of the cemetery, there are no markers at all. I don't know how they know where people are. There must be something that I'm not seeing. But actually, that's Old St. Joseph Cemetery that has a big fence around it, and they won't even let you in it because they feel that it's too dangerous to even let people in. So I got the map, and I could look through the fence, and I kind of know where the area was, but that was the closest I could get. It was New St. Joseph Cemetery that I got to walk around in and find other people. So that's a big contrast, though, to what we have here, it seems, in Rush County, because I drive down to Hopewell or Fishers in Richland Township where I live, and there are absolutely no records, no office, so it's a little harder. I know you're trying to find people that are in charge of some of the ones in Richland Township to get more information. So big contrast there. If you're looking for somebody in a bigger city, though, maybe you'll really luck out and be able to find something. If that doesn't work, you might just be on your own journey here, which I've been on a lot of times too, where I'm just kind of wandering around and hoping I'll find that tombstone. And I have been successful in doing that. And when you get to those cemeteries, there's 5 photographs they recommend that we take. One is the cemetery sign. The second is the entire tombstone front and back. Then you want to get close up so that you have details. Number 4 is a wide shot of the tombstone so you kind of know where its relative position is. And then get the neighbors, because likely they are going to be related somehow. Let's see, is that going to work? Okay, it's on my screen, I guess. Huh. This is not working like it worked at home. I don't know. Well, I had pictures of each of those to show you what I meant by that. So if after the
presentation is through running, you want to see what I took as my photographs and stuff, we can do that. But those are the five. This one, I think, is really important so that you can go back and try to find where you were again. I have some memories of going to funerals when I was a young girl. In fact, I had an uncle who passed away. He used to live in Cincinnati. I was born in 56, and he must have died in, like, 67, something like that. But I was able to just walk around that cemetery and ultimately find him because I remembered that we looked over this hill, and I remember my mom asking, "What's that down there?" And they said, "Oh, that's Procter & Gamble." So when I went to the cemetery, I just walked over until I could look over the hillside, see P&G down the hill, and then I just started going back and forth down rows. So you'll save yourself some trouble, though, and help those rusty brain cells if you actually have a map or some kind of wide-angle photo so that you can tell where these folks are. Had my slide work too, and I'm sorry that my links aren't working like I thought they used to. It's either me, that, or the new version of PowerPoint. I don't know which one it is. But I went down to the Hopewell Cemetery and had the tombstone for some of the Millers who owned my farm at one point in time. And in the same row are some people named Barber. Well, you would think, what's the connection here? Well, it actually ends up one of the spouses used to be a barber. So there is a connection, and it is interesting when you finally hit that aha moment. It's like, okay, now I understand why these folks are together. So if you're going out to get your photographs, though, there are a couple of tricks to try to help make sure that you get good photos. One of them is to work at managing the light that you have. I find that the time of day has a lot to do with whether you're going to get a good photo or not. Obviously, I run into some cemeteries, and I don't know why this is. Some of them seem like the tombstones are laying north to south, and some of them really are east to west. And I thought the rule was supposed to be you were facing the east so that you saw the rising sun from your tombstone, obviously. But that doesn't seem to be a convention here in Rush County, as near as I can tell. They're every which way. So obviously the old taking the photograph into the sun is going to be an issue some places. So you're going to have to visit your cemetery, know what your orientation is, and then pick your time to go back. Interestingly, too, it seems like cloudy days make better photographs than really bright, sunny days. And I've especially noticed this when I like to take photographs in my yard and garden. I know I'm not a master gardener, but I do have a lot of flowers, and I like to keep my kids informed of how my garden looks. And the color of the flowers always looks so much better if I take that photograph on a cloudy day, because I guess it just gets washed out by so much sunlight. So try to pick your day if you can, especially, you know, if it's a cemetery here that you can get to pretty easily. Another technique they talk about is to improve the lighting that you might have, and there's a couple techniques here that we're going to talk about on some future slides, but you can use mirrors, you can use reflectors, and you can use remote flashes to help you get the better look at the inscription on those tombstones. And then editing the photo. And I think, Kevin, you have some experience at editing photos. I don't know if you have fancy software. Photoshop is something people talk about.
Something free is called Photoscape.
Photoscape, okay. But that's a technique, and we have a slide, and maybe Kevin can fill us in a little bit more on some of what he's able to do with photographs when we get to that one. So this is an example of a tombstone where the only difference was the time of day that the photograph was taken. Now, I didn't myself take this photograph. I got these off of a website that claims, you know, again, that was it. But I do know that last night I went to Hopewell at 9 o'clock at night, and I could see a whole lot better than I could when I was there previously at about 12 noon. So I think the shadows, and there was no sunlight then. It was just me, you know, there was light, but there was no sunlight shining on these tombstones, and it may for a big difference. I see a couple people nodding their head that you must have experienced this too.
Well, when I used to travel and do for the professional genealogist, I would spend the day at the library, and about 4 o'clock I would go to the cemeteries.
Okay, so
it just always seemed to work better.
Okay.
When I go arrowhead hunting,
oh,
I go till dark, and you can see them just 10 times better than when the light's bright.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you can even take a better picture.
Okay.
Especially when there's a full moon.
Oh, yes, yes. It was very bright last night.
Seems
so.
Mm-hmm.
So, pick your time if you can. And then to get more light on the tombstone, this gentleman is actually using a mirror. He's in one of these densely wooded cemeteries. But something I also saw recommended was just take one of these sunshades like you have in your car. Now, again, I played with this yesterday when it was pretty bright out, so I really couldn't see much improvement, and I really think you need that second person holding this, you know, and I actually tried getting under it at one point in time and shading, but you might have this in your car already, and it could be the very thing that helps you get a better photograph. And this is one, I wish I owned the equipment to do this. Maybe somebody in the room does, but this is a remote flash. And I remember we had one for a fancy 35mm camera that we used to have. It used roll film, so I'm talking many years ago. But the flash was kind of neat. You could put it on the camera, or you could have it off the camera and just, you know, click it and it would flash. So the difference between these two photos is somebody did use that remote flash. You can buy them on Amazon. They only cost about $20. I don't own one. I don't know if anybody in this room owns one. But, you know, the thing is that you can get it at a different angle and stuff, too, because when we're trying to take a flash with our camera, it's coming at the same angle as the lens is looking at the object. But if you could get the light coming, you can get the benefit of some of the raised and lowered edges of the tombstone impression might
be
a little more noticeable.
Have you tried your flashlight?
Oh.
Take it with the flashlight on?
No, I haven't.
That works.
So put the flashlight over here,
yeah,
and then take the picture looking straight on or something.
Or are you seeing with your flashlight on your phone?
Flashlight on the phone.
Oh. No, I haven't tried that. Okay. So again, some techniques to try after the sun's starting to head down a little bit that you might get some better. Take your bug spray with you, though, because that's about the time the mosquitoes start coming out as well. Okay, thank you for that. And this is maybe a little hard to see, but there's the tombstone with the photo as taken over here on the left. And then on the right is when you use some of the photo editing techniques. This one, again, was done in Photoshop, and you said you had Photoscape, which is a free download then. Can you tell a little bit about what adjustments you can make, and if you've had any real aha moments that I can read it now?
When you reverse the color or the black and white or whatever,
okay,
a lot of times you can read
things
the
pop
readings
out,
yeah,
then. Okay.
Done that helping my cousin when she figured out all the writing on the corner restaurant wall.
Oh, okay.
I use Picasso, and it's got different filters. You can,
okay,
different, like, it'll darker, lighter, green, blue, gray,
okay,
kind of things that you can put over it, and it makes a difference.
So Picasso, is that something you have to pay for? Is that a, okay, so Picasso and Photoscape might be two things that. And are those on your computers or on your phones?
They're on my computer.
Okay. So that might be a technique. And then, of course, these are all very desirable methods to get your data from the cemetery, because we've done absolutely no harm. We've just walked out to, you know, it implies that you can get to the cemetery and there's not a bunch of stuff growing on your tombstones when you get there. But photographic records are probably the preferred way to get this data.
And cropping also, when you crop it,
yeah,
it blows it up.
Yeah,
that
so enlarged will help. Yeah.
You can see a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Have you used anything other than a cell phone to go take the photographs? I mean, like a real Does anybody take real cameras?
I use a real camera.
Okay, so does that work better for you than the cell phone, though?
Well, I guess when I've done most of it, I've just had a real camera. I didn't have one on my phone.
Oh, okay. So that's kind of how you started doing it. You kind of stick with that stuff, too. And this ended up being my favorite method, and that's to put aluminum foil over the tombstone. So I actually played with that last night. I brought in, and you can't see very well what I came out with, but it did really make some things pop out to me that I was having trouble reading during the daytime, because this guy actually did die in January 13th of 1851. And I finally got his age at 65. I thought it was 55. But I was kind of cheap, and I didn't want to use a whole big roll of aluminum foil, so I just kind of put it around the tombstone like this. And I obviously, I didn't want to tape it to the tombstone. What I should have been doing is I should have had really wide aluminum foil, and I probably should have put it down the back and then back over the side, and then taped aluminum foil to aluminum foil, or had some extra pairs of hands there helping me. And then I took a makeup brush. They recommend that you use something that was really very soft. So I took a real stubby little makeup brush and then just started, you know, well, first I smoothed it all out so I had a smooth surface with my hand, and then I just started scrolling around, circular motion, with the makeup brush and stuff. So I'm sure there's other very soft bristle brushes and stuff that you could use that maybe come from...
That's an awesome idea. And then you could take it to that, like, Photoscape or hers, and then reverse the black and white, and it's all you would have on there was the letters and the numbers.
Oh!
That's all you could see.
Okay.
And it would be perfect.
Okay, okay. This was fun yesterday. It was...
It was
pretty neat.
That's great.
You know, but I hate wasting aluminum foil, too, because it's a non-renewable resource. And I haven't exactly figured out, after you've done one, can you kind of smooth it out and start over again? So,
but like a softer aluminum foil? It's not like what you put on a grill?
This is just Reynolds wrap. What do you put on a grill?
It's a heavier grill wrap. It's heavier.
Okay, so this was probably real light.
It's the more wide, too.
Oh, with the wide stuff over, it's always heavier. This was the narrow stuff like this.
Isn't the grill, isn't it usually wider? So.
What you might be able to do then, if you use this lightweight stuff, you might be able to have some butcher paper or something and wrap it around the back and then tape this to the butcher paper and then on the other side, again, take extra hands with you too. But I thought that worked really neat, and it is one of the approved methods for getting out and getting the information that's considered one of the harmless methods, both to us and the tombstone. So that was fun. There's a couple more down Hopewell I want to go explore, and then I'll try Kevin's technique of reversing the colors, because I don't have that software yet either. Whoops. Let's see if we can go backwards. Okay, and this is one I want to try. Obviously, I've got to wait until winter, and this is to go and just rub snow into it. Obviously, it's not going to work on one of those perfectly bone white tombstones, but this looks like a neat technique for some of the ones that are darker. So we'll see if we get any snow this coming winter. We didn't have much this past, so we'll see, and I'll try this out. So I thought that was neat. So those are all the do's. I want to share with you some of the don'ts, because you might today be able to read something in greater detail, but you're going to do harm to the tombstone, and it's not going to be there for future years. And I'll try to explain to you as we go what's wrong with some of these things. And let's see, I don't know if I can expand that. Let's see. Okay, can you read that pretty well?
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's take shaving cream first, because it's sitting right here. You hear a lot of recommendations to use that, and I'm sure it works really well. The problem with it is the pH of it tends to be a little bit on the acidic side, so that can be harmful for the tombstone. And it just the very thing that makes it feel good on a man's face or a woman's legs after we used our shaving cream. It has some oils and emollients in it. And those aren't going to come off of the tombstone very easily with just simple rinsing. So that oil's going to get in all the nooks and crannies, and it's just going to attract more dirt, and it's going to hold on to some moisture, and it's just going to do future damage. So that's one thing that we don't want to be using. Things out of the kitchen: baking powder, baking soda, powdered sugar, cornmeal, cocoa, flour. We've all had these in our pantry, and most of them we've had go bad on us at some point in time. So that very degradation that can happen in your kitchen, it can happen on the tombstone too. And if you get that all, again, in all the nooks and crannies, it's going to be, again, decomposing on the tombstone, causing additional reactions that you don't want to have that could lead to degradation there. Let's see, chalk and paint. Obviously, these tombstones were not meant to be painted, and that's a permanent thing that you could, you know, semi-permanent, I guess. It doesn't seem like much paint is permanent anymore, but it's going to, again, try to seal the surface, just as you're trying to seal the wood to keep, you know, the sun or the water from doing damage. It's going to seal the tombstone, and then it's not going to be able to breathe, and it's going to end up trapping moisture inside of that tombstone. And chalk is made of a surprising number of chemicals that you're just forcing into the nooks and crannies. And a lot of the times that people have used chalk, it was a colored chalk, and that leaves stains on the tombstone. So we've talked about chalk, flour, cocoa, paint, cornmeal, cornstarch. I may have not said that before, but that falls in with all the other things. Soap and cleaners, detergents, those are all cleaning agents. So you have the Dawn. We probably have, right here we got Dawn. We probably have other things underneath here. And it's tempting to take the household cleaner and a good old scrub brush and go out there and start working on the tombstone. However, there's usually some form of sodium, like sodium lauryl sulfate or sodium something, that makes a product sudsy. Because you make soap by mixing sodium hydroxide with a fat that then makes soap and glycerin. So we did this all the time at P&G, all kinds of different soaps. But that sodium can cause degradation because it makes a salt. So sodium chloride is something you started with, but there's other anions, that negative ions that the calcium likes to bond with, and it can find them sometimes out there in the environment or in the cleaning solution. So you actually end up with these things putting some kind of sodium salt in, again, all the nooks and crannies of the tombstone. And we see what sodium chloride can do to roads and your driveways and things like that. So these soaps, when they leave behind sodium, can cause damage. Bleach is an absolute no-no for tombstones. I don't know how many of you have ever used bleach on a rag or even got it on your bare hand and you realize, man, my hand feels almost slimy, or that rag or sponge you were using disintegrated. It's like, well, what happened to my rag? And it's like just dissolving in the bleach. Well, there's a lot of photographs of tombstones that somebody put bleach on them, and I mean, it really does clean. It's inexpensive. It's very available. It's got a lot of desirable things going for it, but it does really bad damage, and it can cause lamination or delamination, I guess I should say, where the tombstone almost like flakes apart in different layers. Same way with ammonium peroxide. They're just really too strong on the pH scale to be touching a valuable tombstone. So these are all the do-nots of going out and trying to get your information. A lot of the times you can get what you need from a genealogical standpoint simply by taking that photograph, and you didn't have to go to any of these chemicals. This is more, you know, when somebody couldn't read it or they're tempted to clean up, you can go too far. Also need to remember that every time somebody does clean a tombstone, you're taking a little bit of that tombstone off. I think I've heard stories about Well, my neighbor, somebody was teasing her. They recently had an auction and sold off a lot of their furniture. I was talking to her daughter about how beautiful everything looked, and she says, yeah, we used to tease Mom that she was going to wear out the furniture by polishing it. So the truth of the matter is, on tombstones, you are taking a little bit off every time somebody cleans it. So this is a case where less is more. I'm practicing less is more in my house, too, so that I don't wear out my furniture, or my floors, or my sink, or any of those things. If any of those techniques to use photography don't, and maybe my slides are a little bit out of order, I'm talking out of order here, but you're going to be tempted to clean, but your intent shouldn't be to make it look like new. If you're tempted to clean it all, just enough that you can read what's there would be as far as you want to go. Excuse me. The two recommended cleaning materials are just a little bit of water and some thyme. And one of the helpful hints I read was to take a spray bottle instead of a bucket. It seems like your water goes further than if you're slopping it around out of a bucket. So just squirt this on and then give it some time to set. And then you should be able to go back and remove some of the materials. So they recommended a plastic scraper or some kind of wooden spatula, so a wooden stir stick, especially here at the curved edge, seems like a good idea. Popsicle sticks, if you have those, they have nice rounded edges. You want to make sure everything that you're working with is wet. The stone needs to be wet, your devices that you're trying to clean the little molds and lichens and mosses off with need to be wet as well. And you don't want to keep going back and forth. You know, just like you don't want to sand wood by going back and forth, you want to try to you know, go at it gently and in some sort of orbital motion, and then rinse it clearly. Completely. Another thing that I'm sure a lot of people know and hear from cleaning walls is, where do you start when you clean a wall? Do you start at the top or at the bottom of the wall? At the bottom. Yeah, because you don't want a dirty wall having little streaks of water running down. You'll end up with streaks on your wall. And even if you start working your way down and you ultimately get to here, you've got that streak that was caused by the water that ran down from above. So tombstones are the same way. You want to start cleaning at the bottom and then work your way up to the top. A lot of the information, though, is at the top, so you're kind of tempted to start there. But be as gentle as possible, rinse often, and keep everything that you're using wet, brushes or anything. I didn't bring in a brush. The advice I received there was, don't use anything that you wouldn't use on the hood of your car. So nothing stiffer than that. This is not necessarily the grout brush that you really attack that mold and stuff in your shower with. This needs to be something very gentle. So you ought to be able to go to the auto store and get something that would work there. So this is a picture of a person using just plain water and a brush. And this is an example of before and after, just with plain water and a brush. So that would be, and they are drastically different. I know the lighting here isn't necessarily showing that for us, but it worked in that case. Some cautions, even if you're going to go out and just use some water for your cleaning, is watch the temperature. You don't want to be throwing cold water on a hot stone. In fact, I worked with someone once who left his car sitting outside in the sun and decided it was time to wash the car. So he takes the garden hose and starts spraying the car, cracked the windshield. So, you know, if it can happen to a windshield, imagine what you're doing to this poor, you know, tombstone that can't actually tell you what's going on. So you could do some damage from that sudden shock. Likewise, you don't want it to be too hot, but you don't want it to be too cold either. You know, I make sure I don't go to the car wash if I think the temperatures are going to get down below freezing, because that seems to be when the water wants to freeze in the lock or in the door jamb or something like that. So again, same issue here for the tombstones. and really make sure that you have enough water to get the job done. A lot of the old cemeteries here, I noticed, do have hand pumps. I haven't been around to all of them to check them. I know I put out flowers at my parents' plots at Calvary Cemetery, and I do know that pump works, so the rest of them I haven't been out checking, so at least maybe you can replenish your supply of water. Some sites actually recommend that you take distilled water, so we know Brush County water has a lot of minerals and stuff in it, but that's kind of hard to manage that as well. The other thing to check before you clean anything is obviously make sure that the tombstone can handle that cleaning. Again, I talked about that delamination that happens when you put bleach on a tombstone, what can happen over time too, but it's just like all the layers coming apart, or like if you had a veneer where the veneer starts to come away from the wood. So you don't want to necessarily attack those by cleaning. Leave those to professionals. Stress cracks. You don't want to be attacking those with a thorough cleaning either that we would do. You need professionals there. One way it says that you can tell if you have stress cracks, and sometimes you can see this on concrete too. If you get it wet, you can see all the little hair lines because they absorb a little bit more moisture into those nooks and crannies and those cracks. So leave that. And then obviously, if there's loose sections, call in the professionals, and then again, the biological growth, which is the mosses and the lichens and those little yellow things that are growing on tombstones, which need to, you know, remove that very carefully. So again, those might be all reasons to call a professional. Plant growth, we talked about trees earlier, but something that seems to really like to grow in these little obscure cemeteries and stuff is ivy. Sometimes it's poison ivy, sometimes it's the good ivy, but you don't want to just go in there and start yanking at the ivy and pulling it off of the stone. I think those of you who have ever worked with ivy, you had to get it under control, even on a brick wall. You know, it has almost like suction cups where, you know, it had to do something pretty remarkable to be climbing up that wall or climbing up that tree. So if you just start going in there and ripping it off, you're going to, you know, take a little bit of the tombstone with every piece of ivy that you pull off. So the recommendation here is to kill the ivy first. If it's the good ivy that's not going to give you a rash, you can go in there and you can cut it like every 6 inches so that it's going to die off, that there's not a chance of that little section getting back and having a root somewhere. If it's poison ivy, I highly recommend crossbow. It seems to be the best stuff, or I suppose Roundup and the right concentration would work too, but I have to stay clear of those cemeteries. Like I said, that seems like the place, though, where the revolutionary soldier is on the back 40 that you had to hike to is where those are. So once you've got the ivy dead, then you can remove it. It's not going to be suction cupped on. It's going to have, the suction cups are going to have dried up, and you can safely remove it and then proceed with your regular cleaning. And there's this thing called D2 that a lot of people use to clean tombstones of that biological growth stuff. And I don't know, has anybody in this room ever used it? I haven't, but if you start doing internet searches, you're going to come across it. And there's some people that swear by it, and I guess I'm in a different camp that I would be very cautious about using it. But they act like you can get it, you cut it about 50%, you squirt it on the tombstone, and then, you know, with a soft brush, you know, that you would have used on the hood of your car, you can just kind of take these orbital motions and get it cleaned up, and that you'll leave the stone looking 1 degree of clean on day one, but it's going to keep continuing to work. Now, national cemeteries use this to clean their tombstones. It was used on the Washington Monument recently. It was used on a museum in Chicago. I mean, there's a list of places it has been used. But what's in common with all of those locations is we're talking about granite or marble. But when you go to the cemetery, not all those tombstones are granite and marble. Some of them are a lot more softer metals, some limestones, some sandstone. Those were very easy to carve material, so that's why it was popular. In fact, on the hardness scale, where you know like a diamond is a 10, I don't know what marble and granite actually are, probably 7 or 8, but sandstone is down here at like a 3 and a 4, so it's a very soft stone, but some people absolutely swear by this D2, but I just want to warn you, if you don't know what the tombstone is made of, don't be using D2, but it does sound like super easy to use. There's another product called Wet and Forget. A lot of people are using Wet and Forget on their roofs now. Have you noticed how we're starting to get that black stain on roofs? So you can buy Wet and Forget, and you go out there and you spray it all over your roof, and you wait for the rain to come down, and it should remove that black staining. And again, the organizations that are in charge of knowing, you know, what to put on cemeteries and doing no harm, they neither endorse it or say that it's bad. They're just taking a neutral position on it right now. So you, again, if you guys do an internet search, you might find it. For now, I'm going to be sticking with water and my little wooden spatulas and my soft brush that I use on the hood of the car. I think those are the best methods to be using right now.
Marilyn, that guy that Joel David that comes every November, he used that on the cemetery that he went out and cleaned.
Oh, okay.
And so
he comes in August usually, right? Or
November,
later?
Usually
November.
Around Veterans Day. But he did it, and when he talked to us and talked to, about the restoration that he'd done in that cemetery, he'd sprayed it on it, but it hadn't. It has to set. Like you spray it in November and it sets all winter and works, and then he hadn't really had like time to look at it to see.
To know if the effects.
He had seen it 1 year, but I don't think he'd gone back another year to.
Okay.
Because he's interested in will it damage any time, you know, anything.
Yeah.
So, but he did use that.
Actually, I found a group and I joined it online. It's about cemetery preservation. And they're going after a grant to try to study some of these things. There's actually a soap called Orvis soap. A lot of people, okay, and it's on actually their website, but it actually has sodium in the formula. So it's like, you're telling me I can use Orvis and you're telling me I can't use sodium. I don't understand. And they said that, yeah, they have some conflicts in their own recommendations, and they're going to go for a grant and try to study some of these different materials. But Orvis soap is what people use when they get livestock ready to show them up here at the fair. Interesting, a product also distributed by Procter & Gamble. Not that I'm trying to do a sales pitch here for my previous employer today. But so that's a thing called D2, so be careful if you're going to use that. And these are some of the other things you don't want to do, even though boy, when you get out there, if you actually are trying to clean, and again, I don't know that you have to clean to get your data for your family tree. No power tools. Don't try to fix anything with just concrete. Don't try to stick it back together with something that comes out of a caulk gun. And definitely no chemicals like bleach. This is an example of what bleach did. Can you see how there's all these like layers? It's just like splitting apart. And this cemetery, I mean, they're all bleach white, these old marble tombstones. But yeah, bleach has its place, but evidently it's not in the cemetery. These are a couple others don't. Power washing, and there may be some power washing that goes on at a national cemetery, but I'm sure those people are controlling the pressure better and just, you know, have the right equipment. But we don't want to, and I would have a hard time getting out there with a pressure washer anyway, probably, with the water supply over here at a pump, so I don't know how they do it. And this wire brush, you know, let's leave these at home for getting, you know, a piece of metal cleaned up ready to paint or working on auto body something. So those are definite no-nos. And this is a grinding wheel somebody's taking to a stone. They liken grinding to being like just drilling the enamel off of your teeth. Evidently, these stones, when we, you know, mine them out of the ground and then put them up as tombstones, they kind of have a healing process where they make a little bit of something like a skin to protect themselves. They kind of you know, form that in conjunction with the sun and the elements around them. And if you start removing that skin, you're going to open up the, essentially the pores. It's like us, you know, our skin is our outer layer to protect us from a lot of things. So you can open up the tombstone for future damage. And there's another thing that people like to use called nalox or nylox brush. And this is just a picture of one particular shape. It comes in all kinds of different shapes, but people get it and put it on the end of a power drill. And I can see where that would be very neat to use, like to just clean up a surface, but it needs to be, you know, used more for its intended purpose, which would be like auto body repair or something like that, because it really is tough on a tombstone. You can see it even comes in grits, removing paint, corrosion, based on the color. So this one here is blue. It is fine, but it removes paints and finishes from wood. So that's definitely nothing you want on your tombstones. Are there any questions?
Yeah, I have a comment about the nylox. I know John Walters, the graveyard groomer, he used to endorse
that.
In fact, I went to a cemetery workshop that he gave a number of years ago, and he was using them.
Mm.
He's taken a lot of flack for that on the internet.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he has recanted that or not, but he's definitely, I mean, there are a lot of people that are hostile about that
uh-huh.
method. So it's just interesting that he was actually using them.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting. You know, so many things seem good until they're proven wrong. DDT, great pesticide, and then we get the rest of the story, and now, you know, you don't have pesticide or DDT available. So, you know, this may have seemed like the best thing since sliced bread, and then when you get the rest of the story, it would be interesting. Maybe you can look up his name for us, and or we can look it up while we're still here to see if he still endorses it. That would be interesting.
He's been pretty quiet about it. I mean, I haven't seen anything.
He didn't recant, but he doesn't promote anymore, huh?
I'm not really sure, but mm-hmm. but like I said, a lot of people have been very hostile to him about that. So
mm-hmm.
I'd be surprised if he's still endorsing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially on the internet and Facebook. If you people can get pretty hostile, which I noticed on that one website recently. So, any other questions? Yes.
Not a question, but a couple years ago we went to Adams County, Ohio to find his great-great-great-grandparents' tombs,
mm-hmm.
and it was very, very hot, and
mm-hmm.
we were trying to photograph them, and the lady who owned the property went and got a spray bottle, and so we got much better pictures of them.
Oh, by wetting them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, so just plain old water wetting them, okay, so yeah, definitely take this guy with you and, you know, water supply. That's a good, helpful hint. I'll edit this
old.
To include that. Yes. You know, just as it goes in the nook and crannies of the cracks, it probably goes into the recesses there. Yeah.
Right, because the lady who actually owned the property had given what she thought was correct information to the genealogical society there,
mm-hmm.
but one of the numbers was incorrect.
Oh, okay.
And so when we were actually there, we got to see the correct numbers.
Good.
So we know what was his family.
Oh, got to fix everything then.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Good technique. Well, hopefully these are some techniques you can use the next time you head out to the cemetery to try to do some sleuthing. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next meeting is, we skipped July, right?
Yes.
Or is July the one?
We've skipped it because we usually go to that conference.
I can't turn it off.
But if we're fortunate enough to get the grant, we will be filming, hopefully in July, too.
So there might be other work going on.